This is the State of Things from the Upstage Cabaret in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. Thank you. The NCAA estimates that college athletes suffer more than 10,000 concussions a year. But perhaps more alarming is the fact that about three-quarters of these cases are not reported to coaches or team doctors, and repeated blows to the head have been linked to a degenerative brain disease known as CTE. So how can we encourage players to report head injuries, especially if they know it might cost them playing time? Jeff Milroy and David Weirich are looking for answers. They're public health professors at UNC Greensboro and were recently awarded a $400,000 grant from the NCAA and the Department of Defense to study that issue and help change the culture of concussions. And I want to welcome them to the program. Jeff and David, welcome to State of Things. So let's talk more about, I suggested that one of the fears, one of the reasons you might not report this is because you're going to be benched. Is that true? And what else do we know? David, let me start with you about the reasons you might not report a head injury.
Well, you can imagine that with that type of injury, you're not walking off the field limping, you're not bandaged up. So just like there might be with some mental health issues, there's a stigma attached to it. Is the person really hurt? Is there some reason that they're wanting to get out of practice or the competition today? So there are kind of a variety of different levels of anxiety or fear associated with that stigma that may result in student athletes saying, maybe I'll just see if I can play through this one.
Yeah, so not just sitting down, but the fact that we might think you're faking it and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So, Jeff, what are the sports in which we see the highest rates of concussions?
Well, I think the most obvious one is football. But some of the other ones that get lesser attention, men's and women's soccer, men's and women's lacrosse, women's field hockey, women's volleyball. And so in all of those sports, so it's not necessarily ever a direct impact to the head, but it could be as they're falling, or in volleyball per se, as they're diving and kind of the jarring of the neck and the head that could result in that potential concussion.
Are there protocols in college, in collegiate sports, in the NCAA, in terms of if I say, coach, I'm feeling a little woozy after getting hit in the head, is there something that has to happen? David?
Yeah, there. I wouldn't say that every university or every professional organization probably would, but there are pretty distinct protocols. So a lot of universities now, including UNC Greensboro, Elon University, who we do a lot of work with, at the beginning of each academic year, they'll collect some basic baseline data on their student athletes. It could be their gait, ways that they respond to questions, and if there is suspicion that they've suffered a concussion, then they can go through those same protocols and try to make a determination if possibly the athletic trainer is dealing with a concussion.
Well, what are the rules around that? Again, if there is suspicion, if I'm a coach and I've got a star player, I might not want to suspect anything, right?
Once the athletic trainer gets involved, the coach is really at the mercy of the athletic trainer. They have full medical rights for that student athlete's well-being at that time. And so they get to make the call, and if the athletic trainer then passes the student-athlete off to the physician, a diagnosis is made, then they immediately go into whatever the concussion protocol is.
All right. Well, tell me about the nature of your research, because you're really, Jeff, looking at kind of some behavioral methods to change the culture around this. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so you kind of alluded to some of those things earlier, and David did as well, in terms of what are the reasons why they're not reporting, and I think immediately we always go to this conscious decision to not report, and that might be the case in some respects, but not always. And so some of the things that we're trying to do and the things that we're trying to target are things like an experiential attitude that they might have. And so this is really falls within maybe a perception that they have, and the emotions that kind of come up as they think about reporting. And then beyond that, what do they think is going to happen once they report to their coach? Or maybe it's another player or some other athletic personnel. So we're going to try to use real specific online technologies and strategies to hone in on some of those things. And there's a variety of other risk factors, risk and protective factors that we're looking at. One of the things that I believe is very unique to what we're doing is that we're going to integrate the coach into that process. So not only integrate them into the intervention process, that is bringing the students' perceptions, their norms, back to the coaches electronically or in this web-based program that we'll have, but then also really hone in on the coach's role in kind of setting that culture. Because that's the big thing here is kind of that setting that culture, and it comes from their teammates, it comes from the communication they use, but then also the coach's communication. You could have.
That sounds like you've got a lot of moving parts. I mean,
absolutely.
On the one hand, I might kind of be lying to myself. I don't want to acknowledge this. So now you're getting really deep, and I'm going to ask you how you test for that. But then another is, well, am I right about what the other players are going to say about me if I report a head injury? I assume that everybody's going to think I'm a wuss and I'm chickening out, but I might not be right. I mean, that seems like a whole other level of testing and a lot going on. Am I right about that?
You've absolutely.
Got to, yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that we know is that we as people do a really poor job typically in perceiving what even our closest peers think. And so a lot of this is getting the coach to try to initiate some real honest discussions around topics such as this with the team so they can outwardly express their feelings and their opinions and kind of take the guesswork out of it. Because there are some taboo topics, and injury and dealing with injury amongst athletes is often a very taboo topic in the locker room. You don't want to admit that you've got that. And so, you know, getting the coach to facilitate those conversations is obviously going to be a really critical piece of this.
What is it about the research and the techniques that you use that can get coaches and players over that barrier?
So can I work backwards for a second?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if you try to think about what ultimately what we're trying to do within a team environment is we're really trying to get the coach to create a culture, because the coach is primarily responsible for the culture of that team. And so can they create a culture of what we call care seeking among the student athletes? So regardless of whether we're talking about concussion or any other injury or disorder that the student athlete is dealing with, do they feel like they're in a safe environment where they can go to the coach, they can go to their teammates, and be heard, and that regardless of whether where we are in our standings right now and what our ultimate goals are in terms of wins and losses, that my health and well-being is the top priority for this team, and I'm going to be supported in that.
I mean, it sounds like a mighty big hurdle because, look, it sounds touchy-feely in a world where you are really touchy-hitty,
yeah.
Right? I mean, and the point is that a coach spends a lot of time getting an athlete to invest their bodies in ways that aren't normal, right? And so then to say, but on the other hand, if you're hurt, come tell me. I mean, what is that language? And again, what's the challenge? How do you get – what's the technique to investigate that behavior and convert that behavior to something that ultimately is a good investment? Keeping somebody from being seriously hurt could help them in the long run, but you've got to get them there.
Yeah. So one thing is you're talking about these perceptions and how do we know if they're real or not?
Right.
Part of that is presenting the accurate data back to them. And we've done that with other behaviors, alcohol and other drug use is they have these norms and we present that accurate data back to them. And yes, there is some complication in terms of what they receive and they don't. The same applies to the coach as well, is that, you know, we can ask a coach and say, do you believe in the health and wellness of your student athletes? I'm not certain that there's a coach out there that would say no,
right?
But then what's the translation to their behavior? And I think that's where David's talking about too, is that they're setting this culture. And so having that coach, one, internalize, reflect, take a look at what my values are, and then how do I project them? And that next step, so we theoretically work through intentions. So we'll look at, okay, do we see that their intentions to do so are increasing? Theoretically speaking, we believe that's going to be related to behavior, and we'll be able to collect that data. But then for them to really translate this idea of, I do believe in their health and wellness, and what in some cases are the literal words that I'm using to communicate that. Because like I said, they could say that they believe in the health and wellness, but then someone's showing signs of any injury and they say, walk it off, tough it out, right? And that's the challenge there, is to kind of get them past that hurdle.
How did that work, David? You did work in drug and alcohol abuse and use among student athletes. Translate that. How did it actually play out in that realm?
In terms of how well we did it?
And what it was about knowing how other people felt about drugs and maybe some of the misperceptions they had about drug use among athletes and how learning the facts changed anybody's mind.
Yeah, the norms piece is just, as it will be with a concussion, is a big challenge, but it's one of the more important factors that we work with. And so when I talk about norms, I'm basically talking about three things. I'm talking, you know, with our programming that we're developing, we're trying to help student athletes see that certain alcohol or other drug use behaviors are less prevalent than they may perceive that they are. We're trying to demonstrate to them that those behaviors are also probably less acceptable amongst those people that are important to them than they may perceive they are. And then the third piece is that regardless of your perceptions, it's, you're probably not expected to participate in certain types of behaviors, whether we're talking about really going out one weekend and blowing it out and you're drinking large amounts of alcohol, that type of scene is not an expected behavior for you as a student athlete. So when we talk about norms, those are three primary pieces. The other piece that's really critical, and you were asking about specific strategies, is we work with student athletes and what their expectancies are. And so really trying to clarify those expectancies in terms of expectancies of, if I do report this, you know, I just took a really big hit. I fell down and I banged my head. You know, what are my expectancies if I tell a teammate about it? Or if I'm a teammate and I see that Jeff took a hit and he's not in a condition to think about, should I report this or not? He's in a daze. And so can I, as a teammate, be a good bystander at that point and kind of step in and say, hey, we need to get Jeff out of the game, or he needs to be assessed by the athletic trainer. What are my expectations of how that type of proactive behavior is going to be received?
We'll have to check in with you as the progress, as you progress in your study. Thank you so much for being on the program. Yep. Jeff Milroy and David Weirich, public health professors at UNC Greensboro. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks very much.
Just ahead, we're going to hear about the continuing fight for a living wage from an early adult childhood educator in Greensboro and what it means for everybody across the state of North Carolina. First, we're going to hear some music. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Here's the music of Eugene Chadbourne.